welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here.
Hello, everybody. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Hope the new year is treating you well, rolling through January, the endless month of January. Today, we have an awesome interview. It is my second interview with Phil DeLahaye. He is a TMS mind-body coach, as well as an IFS practitioner. So that stands for Internal Family Systems. He and I met once before, as you might recall on the podcast. And he explained to me and actually did a little in the last podcast, a little exercise with me on IFS and the different parts that we all have inside of us. Our emotional history, our trauma has created all these little parts, you know, our protectors and our firefighters and those that need protecting. And we're going to get all into it today because it's really, really fascinating stuff. So much so that after this interview with Phil, I really said to myself, I want to do some IFS work for myself. It was such a jam-packed interview that we didn't even have time to really talk about my experience of doing the exercise that Phil takes us through. But I did really have a very powerful, energetic, and emotional experience while listening to him and following the steps that you'll be able to do for yourself in just a few minutes. And I really think I might do this for myself a little bit, find somebody who can do this work for me with me for a little while, because it's just so clear when you start looking into it, how healing it can be and how much it comports with all the TMS work that I'm always talking about on this podcast and in all my work. So it's really a treat. It's really a treat to have an expert on who really knows his stuff about this, this work, this IFS, and any expert, you know, that brings something that enhances and enriches our experience here on the podcast. So I'm grateful for Phil. So in a moment, we're going to get to that. A couple things. I have been talking to my lovely Veronica, my programmer over at Omega, and everything is ramping up for our incredible retreat, June 23rd through the 28th, 2024 at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. If you would like to join us, we are starting to expand our group, and we would love to have you. So just go to eomega.org or go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and click on the retreats tab. You get the link. You can sign up to join us at Omega. It is an incredible week of transformation and healing and community. It's amazing. So that's one thing that I can offer you. And I know that it's starting to fill. The retreat itself does not sell out easily, but the accommodations at Omega do. And it's really special to be able to stay on the property. It's like summer camp for grownups. And one of my favorite weeks of the year, every year. And now Lisa's coming back for her second year. And we're so, so excited. We're actually talking to some really interesting and impactful teachers that are going to join us. So more on that as the year goes on. But if you're interested in joining us at Omega, please take advantage of that as soon as you can. All right. So if you can't come to Omega, or if you want to get started working with me in person immediately, I do have my membership community. We meet twice a month on Zoom, and we all meet with each other, and we develop connections between the group. We meet every day online in our private community. And if you're interested in that, just go to thecureforchronicpain.com and scroll down a touch. You'll see the link to join that as well. All right, my loves, enjoy this wonderful interview with Phil. He is so full of great information. And like I said, I'm really inspired to do this work myself. Take care. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the second part, part of my interview with Phil DeLahaye. Welcome, Phil.
Hi, Nicole. It's really great to be back.
So wonderful to have you back. So for those of you who didn't listen to my first podcast interview with Phil, which was, according to Apple Podcasts, season 3, episode 35 of this podcast, if you want to go back and reference it, also true for Spotify and Audio Boom. So I'm sure it's true everywhere. Phil and I did a first part of this sort of inquiry that I was having into internal family systems. So Phil is a mind-body coach, and he is a practitioner in this world of internal family systems. And some people call it IFS. And Phil is also one of the admins for my larger Journal Speak page, the one with many, many, many thousands of you who are in active conversation every day about this work and questions and sharing each other's journeys and celebrating and sharing challenges. It's just the most magical place. So for those of you who don't know that there is an online community totally free of charge, private on Facebook, please go to Facebook and search Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. Phil and my great team of admins just do such a beautiful job of making sure that the community stays on track and kind, which it really is. It's like one of the best places on the internet as far as I'm concerned. But the reason that I'm mentioning Phil's role as an admin is he has a unique perspective on what people are curious about. And he also is shares there that he is an IFS practitioner. And so people have, first of all, really enjoyed our first episode, Phil, as I'm sure you know, and had follow-up questions. And so when Phil and I were talking last month, just kind of going over admin stuff, I was like, let's do this again, because I think this intro into IFS was just an opening, but maybe not enough. And internal family systems and mind-body work, most specifically Journal Speak work and the stuff I've been teaching for years, really has a ton of overlap. So anyway, what we did is Phil went onto the page and asked people to weigh in and ask their questions, and a really wealth of curiosity came our way. So essentially, Phil, I'm going to turn the podcast over to you as the expert, as the teacher, and let's just see where this takes us, delving deeper into the world of IFS.
Great. Okay. Thank you for the introduction. And I also want to thank all the people who left questions on the posts that I put in the group, you know, asking what people wanted to hear about. And so I've kind of prepared some stuff today, which I'm hoping will answer some of those questions. And then I'm also going to answer some of the questions directly at the end that maybe haven't been covered in what I'm bringing to the podcast today.
Great.
So I will start by just doing a super brief kind of recap of what we covered in the first podcast, but I do really recommend that people listen to that first, because it would make it clearer. But just in case, you know, anyone's driving and can't change and go back and do that, I'll just do a super brief introduction. So internal family systems is a model of therapy, but it is so much more than that. It's a model of human personality, and it can also just kind of become a way of life and a way of thinking and a way of relating to yourself. And it's a very, very powerful way of just bringing more self-compassion to your system, which is a huge part of healing. So the kind of cliff notes from the first podcast is that we all have a core undamaged self. We all have like a seat of consciousness, you know, the kind of observational self, the kind, wise adult inside. We all have that. But for some of us, it can be quite hard to access that. And we also all have many, many different parts in our system who are different to that core self. Some of those parts are protected. They're very vulnerable. They hold a lot of burdens and wounds and big feelings. And other parts take on protective roles. So they're the protectors and the protected in our system. Parts, as I said, can hold these burdens. And I'm going to say more about burdens later. The roles that parts take on to protect us can sometimes be really quite extreme, especially in response to trauma. So in a system where there's more trauma, then parts will be a lot more extreme. And another really important sort of central point with IFS is the belief and the truth that all protective parts have good intentions, even when yes. their impact is harmful, even when it's really hard to understand how is this part helping me when it's ruining right. my life. But they really do have our best interests at heart, even if it's not at the beginning at all clear how. hearts can use the body in a variety of ways to get our attention, which is why it intersects so beautifully with mind-body work, because parts use pain and other symptoms as communication or as a tool to get us to behave a certain way, as to try and keep us safe. And the overarching thing again is that when we're able to connect with our parts and get to know them and get to understand them and get into relationship with them from our core loving adult self, then we can help our parts. We can help to heal the ones who are kind of wounded and burdened, and then the protective parts don't have to work so hard, and it just helps to create more balance in our system. We never get rid of parts. We need them. We need all our parts, but quite often it can be really helpful if they don't stop working quite so hard, or if they stop fighting so much.
Yes.
That's the kind of summary of what we covered last time.
You know, I want to say that I often say I often reflect to myself when I'm having ideas or when something inspires me, that everything true is the same. And as I listen to you speak, so many things are coming up for me, like Ram Dass's discussion of little schmooze, and what he talks about, how we all have these big neuroses and they're here for all these reasons. And if we just continue to invite them and invite them and invite them, they're still there. They never leave, but they become these little schmooze that we invite over for tea. And that's just one thing. But what I love is when I notice the similarity, the truth in so many different things that are really here to really serve and help us. So I love that description. And let's keep going.
Yeah, so where I was going to take it a little bit further this time is I was going to start out by just talking a little bit more about some of the different sort of categories that parts can fall into. I think it can be helpful to kind of sort them into these different types of parts based on the way that they behave and the way that they help us. So the protective parts, the ones that have a job in some way protect us or look after us, they can kind of be split into then two categories of protectors. So we have managers and we have firefighters. These are the names that Richard Schwartz, the developer of the model, decided to give them. And so our manager parts are the ones who kind of work hard all the time in the background. They're the ones that are kind of planning, controlling, organizing our lives. And the real key words for managers is that they are proactive. They are constantly working, trying to keep us safe, trying to make sure that nothing bad happens, trying to make sure that nothing bad ever happens again. And they're trying to stop the kind of big feelings of our vulnerable parts from being triggered. So, for example, they will be parts that plan, that organize, that write to-do lists. There will also be ones that criticize us, parts that push us really hard to get stuff done, parts that kind of try to control what we do or try to control other people, parts that are perfectionists. And in terms of symptoms, sometimes managers might use symptoms in a proactive way, kind of like low-grade symptoms that keep us safe, keep us small, keep us fearful.
Okay, so what you're saying is the symptoms that a manager might send wouldn't necessarily be the debilitating migraine that gets you out of the game completely. It would be, you know, that bad back you have, so really you shouldn't go full in to your life in a certain way. Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly that. Or something like kind of low-level fatigue that just stops us from doing too much, stops us from
overexerting.
Absolutely. And the other thing about managers is that those are the kind of voices that will quite often show up in our journal speak practice. So those kind of critical voices, those kind of like voices that are telling us what to do. And also they will often show up as parts that are working really hard to try and fix our chronic pain. So they'll be the ones that will be making all the doctor's appointments and seeking the solutions and making us do our journal speak. You know, we've got to love our managers for actually making us commit to this stuff. But then they might also beat us up if we don't do it. So, but they're the ones who are keeping us on track, who are trying to, you know, do all the things, get it right, make sure that we're doing what we need to be doing.
You know, I love this. I love that we're taking it slowly because I'm really understanding better, which of course is the point of us being here, that the managers, similar to everything in life that causes conflict, are helping us and hurting us at the same time. And that is something that's so key in anyone who's trying to understand this TMS work, is that we're so quick to say my body's against me, or, you know, I'm at war with myself. Whereas like there are benefits and, you know, challenges with everything that is involved. So I love that these managers, they're helping us, but they're also beating us up. And
yeah, you know, they can sometimes be, I mean, you know, in someone who's got a lot of trauma, sometimes those managers can be really extreme. They can be really mean. They can say really horrible things to us. But in a system where there's more healing or where there's less trauma, then those managers will be softer. And we need them again. We need them. We don't want to get rid of them. Even the critical ones, we don't want to get rid of them, but we hope that they might change the way that they help us with a bit of healing. Exactly. They might change their role or help us in a new way. So the second category of protective parts, the ones that are called firefighters. So where managers are proactive, firefighters are reactive. So this is how they are different. So using your example of a migraine, a symptom that is firefighter driven is probably going to be something that's really extreme, that stops us in our tracks, that gets us out of trouble fast. In terms of like non-symptom kind of firefighter parts, it's any sort of behavior, any reaction that happens in us that is like kind of quick and sudden and gets us out of trouble. Firefighters also, they come in, they kind of swoop in. This is why Dick Schwartz called them firefighters, is that they swoop in to like douse the flames when we've been triggered, when something really vulnerable, really painful, really shameful, really unbearable has been triggered. Then the firefighters are like, swoop in. We don't care about the collateral damage. You know, we're going to put the fire out, but we're going to flood the house.
Right.
So they have that kind of reactive energy. So the sorts
that
of things.
I just want to say that makes so much sense to me, because, you know, I think there's very few things that are as traumatic as someone's house burning down, and you sit and watch the firefighters dousing this house with water, thinking how much damage is happening to this house with all this water, but then thinking, but if we don't use the water, there will be fire and it will get consumed. So I really love that analogy.
Yeah, it's like a at all costs is their kind of motto. You know, we're going to, whatever the cost, we're going to stop this. We're going to shut this down.
Right.
And so examples of parts that are firefighters, they tend to be parts that will use things to soothe, distract, or numb us out. So it'll be things like parts that might, you know, binge eat or use substances or alcohol or behaviors to soothe, like addictive kind of behaviors. Sometimes they're not super extreme, but they might numb us out, you know, like binge watching Netflix for like 3 hours straight, or getting caught playing a video game and just not being able to stop. You know, that we'll do when we're feeling low, we'll do that to distract ourselves. Other firefighters' strategies will be things like dissociation, just like taking us out so that we're not kind of mentally present the way that we were before. Things like really extreme fatigue or sleepiness. Like the classic is like people say, I go to do my journal speak practice and I start to fall asleep. That's a firefighter part that is like, these feelings are too much, so we're just going to turn out the lights.
That happens to me, by the way, all the time. It's really crazy. It's like the change is so incredibly quick. Just like you said, they move in quickly. I laugh at myself. I'm literally 3 minutes into this practice, my fingers to the keyboard, and I am fatigued as if I just ran a marathon. Like I can barely keep my eyes open, and I'm thinking, this is hilarious.
Yeah, I have one that does that too. I start to sort of zone out and my eyes just like drift away from what I'm writing, or I find myself staring out of the window. So yeah, sometimes it can be more subtle, but it's that same, it's that something coming in to take you away, taking you away from the pain. It's too much. Other firefighter parts are like extreme rage. Like firefighters are parts that help us set boundaries. They're strong, anger, like coming in when something's been triggered. so they can come out in that way. And also suicide ideation. That's a firefighter that is just trying to protect us in the most ultimate way possible. Like, the pain is unbearable, right. So we're going to give you this way out.
Got it.
I think that is probably all I need to say on firefighters. Any questions on that, or is that...
No, I think it's crystal clear. And just to continue to fortify the bridge between IFS and this TMS work that I'm always teaching is the big things, the things that sideline us, it's an emergency. Your nervous system thinks it's an emergency, time to call the fire department. Like, it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly that. And so those are the protective parts. And again, I'll just touch on the ones who are being protected. I did talk about them last time. And in IFS terms, we call those parts the exiles, because they've usually been shut away. They're mostly kept out of our awareness. We don't want those big feelings to surface because they're not acceptable, or they might get us into trouble, or people might judge us, and it's unbearable to feel those things. So it's kind of a combination of those parts are shut away so that they won't get hurt again, but they're also shut away because, you know, those kids are too much trouble. And when they storm the gates, you know, we get overwhelmed and it's too much. And our managers are like, they feel like they failed, and the firefighters come in to sort it out. So those are the parts that hold the real vulnerability in the system. And exiles, they don't have a role, they don't have a job. They're just usually very young parts, although sometimes they can be older, but they're very often young. And they are the parts that just hold the big feelings and the burdens, and the feelings that they typically are holding are things like fear, overwhelm, panic, loneliness, grief. Anger is a slightly different one, because that's usually more of a firefighter kind of energy, but angry parts can also be exiled for their own protection, because it's not safe for the system. So
that makes sense. Both. And so, that also feels like it draws a real parallel to both. Well, actually, managers and exiles feel like they draw a real parallel to my inner child theory, where we talk about when the inner child energy is coming up throughout your day, it is essentially the exiles. And when the inner child is attempting to wear the higher self's hat and dance as fast as you can and fill all the holes, that's the protectors coming in.
Yes.
And so, yeah, a lot of parallels.
Yes, perfect. I remember actually when I heard you speak about that, I've been doing it. Oh yeah, that's exactly like managing the exile. So yeah, it really is. It fits so perfectly. That parentified child, those are our managers, because our managers are usually children too. They usually learn those jobs when we're kids.
Exactly.
And then they just keep doing it. So that was, that was my little piece on the categories of parts. And then that also comes with a kind of a warning, or not a warning exactly, but just a little bit of advice about, don't get too bogged down in trying to categorize, because some of our thinking analytical parts like to get really like, okay, I need to know exactly what this part is. It a firefighter? Is it a manager? I don't know. And actually, I would say it really doesn't matter too much. With some parts, you'll have a really clear idea. You'll be able to be like, oh yeah, that one's clearly a manager, clearly not. But with others, it doesn't matter. And sometimes parts can kind of switch strategies. You can get parts that do the same behaviors, but with a different energy. So managers can use alcohol, for example, in a kind of 1.5 glasses of wine every night just to chill me out in the evening. That's a manager strategy. Whereas the firefighter will be like, I'm going to have a whole bottle because it's been a really bad day. So, so I think just holding these things lightly, wearing them loosely, as you would say, sometimes it can be helpful to notice. But if you're not sure whether a part is a manager or a firefighter or an exile, just stay with that part and be curious. Don't worry too much.
Yes, I love that. I mean, my whole thing that I'm ever trying to help people understand is, I'm going to give you a lot of information, but just flow within it. Like, trying to figure things out is just another sign of urgency. And then the nervous system feels urgency and sends more pain signals. So it's really about just gently opening your hands, allowing in this understanding, this self-knowledge, this perspective on like, I see why I'm like this. Mm-hmm. And also the most important thing that I'm sure is also a really key point in IFS, which is, I'm normal. Everybody has these things, which is so essential because people in chronic pain so often have felt they're terminally unique. I'm the only one of my friends who feels this way. I'm the only one in my family. Like, that's such a story that we hear all the time. So I just feel like as I'm listening to you, what I feel about IFS is it just invites you into the human race. It's just like, you are just like everybody else. We all have these parts. You don't have to know me to be like, oh, Nicole, I understand you have a firefighter. No, everybody has a firefighter. So it's really lovely to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we all do. And the only difference is the degree of how extremely our parts are working. Like, and where there's more trauma, where there's more distress, parts will be working harder. But we all have parts. We all have critic. Like, inner critic is like pretty much a universal part. I haven't met one yet who doesn't have one. So yeah, it really helps to normalize it. So another concept that I wanted to talk about before I get onto a little exercise, like just a couple of kind of other IFS concepts that I think can be really helpful and that can really help to inform journal speak, is that parts can be in conflict on the inside. And I know I talked about this a little bit in the first podcast, I think, but I'm not sure I got into it in much detail. In IFS, we would call that conflict a polarization. Or we would talk about polarized parts, parts that take the complete opposite view. And quite often polarizations will be a manager versus a firefighter, or it might be a group of managers versus a group of firefighters, because their strategies are not usually compatible. You know, the ones with the to-do lists and the ones who organize our lives don't usually like the ones who make us like lie on the sofa and watch Netflix and drink wine, you know. So it makes sense that those parts would usually not agree about what is needed. But it can also be between any two parts that react strongly. So sometimes managers dislike other managers' strategies, and also the exiles in a sense are kind of polarized with the managers who are trying to suppress them, or the firefighters that are trying to put them back in the box. And exiled parts, young parts, can often be very scared of the mean managers, for example. They can often be really frightened of them. So those are some of the sorts of polarizations that you might notice. I've also got a few examples of some fairly typical polarizations that I see a lot in chronic pain systems or chronic illness systems. So one very, very common polarization is people who have very strong caretaking parts or people-pleasing parts or kind of taskmaster parts that drive us really, really hard and make us do all the things. Very often then there is a polarization with a firefighter part that uses symptoms to just shut us down and make us stop. And actually, makes sense. I'm remembering when I did the little demo with you in the last session, the parts that we worked with had that kind of energy, although they weren't very extreme because they were, you know, you've done so much of your own work, there's balance in your system, but it was that parts that keep you going and doing things, and then the wall, the part that just makes you stop.
Yes.
So that's a common polarization in most people's systems, and and the wall, or the part that stops us, the part that acts as the brake in chronic illness systems, is often symptoms, you know, fatigue, pain, that stops us in our tracks.
Yes.
And then another common polarization, of course, which absolutely speaks to your work and to Sano's work, is that there are parts, managers, who try and suppress and block emotional pain. They try and keep that out of our awareness. And of course, so they're kind of polarized with the exiles who they're keeping away. You know, they just shut that off. We're not going to look at that. So that, of course, is a really common thing that we see in everybody's systems, but again, very commonly in pain or illness systems. And then sometimes the exiles in that scenario can be the ones who are using pain as a way of trying to get attention, trying to be seen, trying to get themselves into awareness. Like, if you're not going to actually listen to my feelings, then I'm going to give you some physical pain instead. So you can't ignore me. You have to pay attention to me.
That also brings up for me the concept that I so often write about and think about in TMS recovery, which is it's the conflict that kills. If you are pretty certain how you feel about something, even if you absolutely hate it, you really aren't going to repress many emotions about it. You know, you're going to be like, this is, you know, you might lament and mourn how much you hate this situation, but it's really the, you know, I love you, but I hate you. I need you, but that makes me feel weak. You know, I want you out of my life, but you're in my family. Like these conflicts are what cause so much need for emotional repression and therefore so much TMS. And it just feels like, again, once again, a bridge, just such a similar energy.
Absolutely. And the other thing I think about conflicts and polarizations is that actually the polarizations themselves create a lot of stress in our system. If we're being pulled between these like two opposing voices, it can feel really, really exhausting and overwhelming. And I think that creates a lot of activation in our nervous system anyway, when we're constantly swinging back and forth between these extremes.
Right.
So the polarizations and noticing polarizations and writing about polarizations or writing with the parts on either side of that can be really, really helpful. And that's something that I did in my recovery. That was something I did before I knew about IFS, actually. I used dialoguing and I wrote about the different feeling. I let the different feelings I was having speak and they kind of ended up arguing. So I ended up one day, I did this wonderful bit of kind of, IFS journal speak before I knew what IFS was, where there was a part of me that it was my kind of taskmaster part that wanted me to just knuckle down and get some work done and finish this thing that I was working on. And I was procrastinating. And then there was another part that just didn't want to do it. It was like a kid at school. It was just like, I am so bored of this. I just want to be outside playing and letting those two parts kind of have a voice, like the critical one going, you're just lazy, just get it done. Like the sooner you do it, the sooner it will be finished. And the kid was just like, I just don't want to. And once I actually let them have their say, afterwards, I felt so much better. There was a little bit more balance and I was able to kind of negotiate and say, okay, we'll do this and then we'll play.
Yeah. And you know what? Also, I want to, because everything you're saying is so reminding me of other things that are so key in TMS recovery. Is when Dr. Sarno and I used to lecture at NYU, one of the biggest questions we would get was, I can't quit my job. I can't leave my family. I can't rob a bank. I can't change these things in my life that are unchangeable right now. How am I supposed to be out of pain if these are the things that are causing me anxiety, angst, anger, sadness, whatever? And Dr. Sarno would always stand up and he would say, we're not going to solve every problem in your life. We're not going to make everything perfect, but you don't need to live in pain if that which is unconscious can become conscious. Your nervous system and your brain are fighting against these feelings rising, against you realizing how much you hate your job, realizing how much you stress about your family, realizing how much you stress about money, you know. But it doesn't have to be fixed in order for you to be out of pain. And it just feels like what you're saying is, we're going to invite a dialogue between our parts. That doesn't mean that you're going to all of a sudden be perfect. Oh, obviously, now I'm just going to sit down and write the thing. You know, it's not about fixing everything, because I definitely think that the energy of people that move into this work are so beleaguered by the years that they have tried things that haven't worked or have come up, you know, short, that when they get to this and when we, you and I, and all these people teaching and helping say, no, we have a real solution for you, they start to maybe want or expect or desire it to really make everything better. And it does make everything better, but it doesn't make everything perfect. And sometimes just the dialogue, like you were explaining, just these two parts saying, I don't want to do it, but you have to do it, is enough to just calm down, be like, I see that I have these conflicts. I can look at them in the face. Just like Dr. Sarno said, we're bringing the unconscious to the conscious. I can see what's going on. And then I can do it anyway. You know, it's like, if you're scared, real courage means doing it scared. Like it's not, you're not going to not be scared anymore necessarily, but you can do it. So all of this feels like really, really on point.
Yeah. And as we listen to those different conflicting internal voices as we get to know those parts, and we're doing it from our core adult self, then we can give those parts compassion. You know, that's what I did with those two parts that I just use as an example, is I was able to kind of be like, okay, so the one that's pushing me and getting really frustrated and kind of beating me up a bit for being lazy, like, okay, I really get why that part feels that way. This part knows that I need to finish this thing. I need to meet this deadline. You know, it's something that I do need to do. But I was also then able to hear the other one who was just stamping its feet. And when I realized that it was young, then I had so much more compassion for like, oh, this is just a little kid that is like, this is boring. I don't want to do it. I hate it. And when I was able to actually listen to that voice and say, yeah, I get it. It is boring. You know, I don't really want to be sitting at a desk today either. And it's sunny outside and you feel like you're missing out, and I really get it, but if you will just like give us a bit of space, then me and the one that wants to get this done will get it done, and then what afterwards I'm going to really give you some time. And just being able to bring myself into that space so that they weren't just, you know,
fighting love out. It
and that is the real power of this work. And journal speak does that in the same way. You know, it's the same thing that we're aiming for, is that being able to witness our parts, witnessing our own thoughts, our own feelings, like we're being our own therapist.
Right.
And it is just so powerful. So the other thing, the other concept I wanted to talk about is what in IFS we call like blending and unblending. So blending is the degree to which a part has kind of taken us over. Because sometimes our parts are in the driving seat. Sometimes we're in the driving seat and our parts are in the car. But sometimes parts just, you know, shove us out of the way and take the wheel. And when that happens, there's not much space for us. And ideally, we want to be able to kind of unblend from that part enough that we can be aware of it and we can know that it's there and we can notice what's happening. So there's still, you know, enough of that self energy present. So self energy is a term used in IFS to describe, you know, that access to our kind of core adult self.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I was actually gonna want to clarify that, Phil, because when you say us versus parts, when I think about this driving the car, when you're saying us, meaning each of us, you are referring to this core, what I would call in the inner child work, the higher self or the flow, the core center of us. I'm throwing words out there, but I wanted you to tell me if I'm right, where we know that things are imperfect. We know that life is going to flow from one state to the next, but we're centered. We're okay. We're able to roll with it. So that's when you say us, like the part we're looking to, or the truth, the center we're looking to access to most successfully live life.
Yeah, exactly that. The core self is kind of, yeah, how I'm referring to, like us versus our parts, although not versus.
Got it.
Parts of us. But so like ideally in life, it's helpful for us to have some access to that self. And how much access we have to that can vary an awful lot. And it's kind of, it's like C. Sykes, who's a wonderful IFS teacher, she talks about like a continuum of self energy, with at the extreme, like super amount of self is like transcendence. You know, we almost never get there, but it is possible for some people, for some of us, maybe never. And then at the complete opposite end of the scale, there is just no access to self energy at all. It's just a parts party and constant kind of parts blending, and even flooding is the other word that gets used. Like if a part completely takes you over, that would be called flooding in IFS terms. Mm-hmm. Blending is where a part is kind of blending with you, but there's still some access to self.
Got it.
And that's how I understand. We spend much of our time, and that's how we need to spend much of our time. You know, I'm partly blended now with my teaching parts, and they're really useful. If they weren't here, you know, if it was only my self energy here, yeah, you probably wouldn't get so much out of me. I need those teaching parts, but I don't want them to be so like driving that I'm not here to. So.
Right. Because you want to access, you want to be a teacher while accessing your intuition, while accessing your humanity. I get it. I feel like I am living that all the time.
Yeah. So blending is a useful thing to kind of know about, because it can help us in our journaling sometimes to notice if a part blends. For example, a sleepy part might blend, or a resistant part that's like, you know, sod this, I don't want to do this today. Like, I'm done with this journaling. You know, we might notice those kind of things coming up. Or likewise, if some emotion comes up really, really strongly and we're really in it, and there's like tears and like just, you know, fear, overwhelm, then noticing that that is a part that's really blended. And while we want to be able to feel those feelings, ideally we want to be with the parts. You know, we want to like share in those feelings with that part so that it's not alone with them. So just bringing in that noticing, like, oh, okay, so there's a part here. Like, oh, wow, yeah, there's a lot of sadness here.
But right.
I am also noticing that. I'm noticing there is this part that has so much sadness. It's not just completely taking me over and I'm just sitting there sobbing into a void, because that's not really healing when we're just sobbing into a void. It's like being with our feelings with compassion is what's healing. It's like that presence of just enough of our self energy is where the real healing comes.
I want to pause you and kind of drill that home. This is so important what Phil is saying. It's the reason that Dr. Sarno used to tell people it's not helpful to go scream in a pillow, or it's not helpful to go take a baseball bat and just bang on your mattress or something. He was like, it's not just about rage. It's about rage connected to places within you that have been hurting, which is why I always preach the third leg of the stool, which is patience and kindness for yourself, self-compassion, because it's about being with. Like, I could scream and I might feel like exhausted afterward, like in a good way, I might feel released, but it's not actually going to move the needle in TMS healing. And so it sounds like for me, what you're saying is, if we are aware that flooding is possible, and if we are able to do this work enough to pause and create an observational self, we can then blend rather than flood, which allows us to then move forward in our healing rather than just be constantly yanked around by the neck by these parts that are looking to protect us.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. And essentially what we're doing in journal speak, in the classic way that you teach journal speak, is we are inviting parts to blend. You know, we're trying to feel those feelings. We are inviting a part. We are saying, okay, so let's write about this thing that happened, and I want to know, how do I feel about this? We're inviting parts to be present with us, but it is being with those feelings rather than just being completely overwhelmed by those feelings is where the healing comes. And so, you know, some of the things that can be helpful is noticing if we're feeling maybe a bit too blended, if it's like a little bit too intense, then sometimes just slowing down, taking a pause, taking a breath, putting our hand, you know, over our heart, and just actually saying to ourselves, like, oh yeah, wow, that's a lot. Like, wow, no wonder I'm feeling so sad about this, or no wonder I'm feeling so angry about this. Just those can be ways of just bringing in a little bit more self-energy, and bringing in that, you know, just that observation, that curiosity. And as soon as we notice a part, then in a way it can't be flooding us, because if there's no space for us, there's nobody to do the noticing. So as soon as we realize that we're blending, that we're blended or flooded, then that is immediately just bringing something else into the space. So yeah, and it can also be true for kind of critical parts as well, because it's not just exiles that can overwhelm us. We can also get really, really blended with managers, like especially sometimes the mean ones who say horrible things to us. It's okay to swear on this podcast, right?
Oh, what do you think?
So for example, you know you might have a critical part that tells you that you're like a piece of shit. You know, sometimes critics say really mean things like that to us, but as soon as we notice that, instead of just like responding to it, because the typical pattern is the critic tells us, you're a piece of shit. And then one of our exiles hears it and goes, I'm terrible. And then we're in that place. And so when we notice, like, okay, so there's a part of me that's telling me I'm a piece of shit. And as soon as we notice that, it's not all of me, but there is a part of me that's telling me that, then we can get curious. We can just separate enough and then try and find out why that critical part is saying that. Like, where did that come from? What's it doing? Like, why is it doing it?
So once again, for those of you who have been, you know, listening to this podcast for years and tend to, you know, come back to me and write me and say, oh, Nicole, you know, this is a Nicoleism. You say this, you say that. So many of those things are just connecting so much to what Phil is saying, because one of the things I'm always saying is, why do we create a pause? I can't even imagine the number of times I've said this on this podcast. We create a pause so we have the power and the freedom to respond to life rather than to react. So it's exactly what you're saying here, which is when we can just see our parts and when we can see, yeah, I'm hearing I'm a piece of shit, but it's not all of me. It's that protector or that manager who's trying to get me motivated. It's not exactly the best way, but it's worked in the past. So we can't shame this part. It has worked, but it's not all of me. And to me, that is analogous to the pause, to giving us the power to respond rather than to react. So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just so much overlap. It fits fantastically. So I've got one more little bit to say about burdens, which I have mentioned before. So basically, burdens is the wounding, really. That is, you know, parts are wounded, parts carry or hold burdens, and these are created by, you know, past stressors, by trauma. Sometimes they can be things that we, you know, get passed down our family line. They can be, you know, intergenerational, or they can be cultural burdens as well. But parts get landed with these, and they have these burdens, but they, parts are not their burdens. Like, once parts are able to let go of these burdens, then they, it kind of frees parts up to be what they were always meant to be. And in the same way, parts are not their roles. So, you know, the part that does the criticizing is not just a critic. There's actually a lot more to that part than that. But, you know, and once that part lets go, it's the role of critic, it can be a burden in itself. Like, parts don't always want to do that. Sometimes a part will be like, well, I don't want to be mean to you, but, you know, I just feel like I have to.
Right.
And so burdens can be, yeah, they can be the job itself. They can be stuck emotions. They can be beliefs that parts have taken on. For example, the part that believes I am a piece of shit, the part that believes I, you know, I'm worthless, I'm unlovable. Those are the sorts of things that parts can be holding on to. And sometimes burdens will almost be one of the first things we might notice about our vulnerable parts. Those are the sorts of things that will often come through again in our journal speak, is that we'll start to notice these themes of like, how do I feel? I feel really worthless. I feel like I'm no good. I feel like I'm too much. I feel like I annoy people. I feel like I'm not good enough. And noticing those burdens can then lead us to parts. Okay, so what part of me is it that has that belief? Who inside holds that belief? Like, where did they learn it? Where did that come from?
Right.
And exploring that can be really, really helpful. So, and the ultimate goal is to help parts to let go of those burdens, you know, with time and with connection to self and with some understanding. So what I wanted to do next was to do a little bit of kind of like almost like an exercise, really, as to how people might be able to use this in combination with their journal speak practice.
Great. So
at some point, you know, if you're driving, you might not be able to do this now, but if you want to do this exercise properly, then, you know, get yourself a pen and paper and find a time when you can listen to this podcast and press pause so that you've got more time to do the actual writing tasks in between. So what I'm going to do today is just to kind of give you the prompts and then you can use them in your own time. So one of the things which is I do a lot and is incredibly helpful is what in IFS we call parts mapping. So it's kind of trying to notice or identify like all the different parts around a particular issue or a particular thing that's happening in your life. And so maybe you might want to choose, think of, you know, a situation, something from your current stresses list, and use that as your prompt. And then I always start by asking myself the question, how am I feeling about this thing? So for example, I did my own example this morning, so I could be the example for you. And I asked myself, how am I feeling about this podcast interview tonight? Because it's like evening, Friday evening, my time that I'm doing this.
Right.
So that was my question. And then what I did is I just wrote a paragraph and tried to like write down all the different things that I was thinking in that paragraph. So I'm going to read you my paragraph and then I'm going to go back through it and identify the different parts, just like to give you an example.
So in terms of people doing this for themselves, would you want them to listen to your explanation first, or would you want them to go do the exercise first with beginner's mind? Which is more helpful for people so we can guide them?
Good question. I don't think it matters actually, because my paragraph might give people ideas. So if people feel like they don't know what to write, then they might want to listen to my example. But if they already know, then go ahead and do it. I don't think it would matter too much either way, because my example is very specific to me. So it's just for illustrative purposes. So what I ended up writing is, so how am I feeling about this podcast interview tonight? Excited and a bit nervous. I love talking about IFS, but I really want the interview to go well. I felt good about the first one and I'm worried the second one will be a disappointment. What if I say something stupid? I have to try and not think about how many people might listen to it. Otherwise, I start feeling a bit sick. The idea of lots of people listening to me is really scary and makes me want to hide. I'm probably making way more notes than I will ever use. That's my timekeeping part. I'm actually overthinking this, and now I'm kind of annoyed about how much I'm overthinking this because it's stressing me out and I'd rather be watching Traitors on TV right now. So that was my little paragraph. And what I did is I went back through it and highlighted it. So this can be quite a nice way of identifying parts in your writing, is if you use the highlighter function if you're on a computer, or if you're writing by hand, use highlighter pens or colored pens to underline and go back and look for the different voices, the different sort of motivations, the different feelings, the different qualities of those voices. And so the ones that I noticed, and you people who are listening, you might notice ones that I didn't notice in my paragraph, but I noticed the first one was like the excited and a bit nervous one, which is like the kind of enthusiastic talking teaching part. And then there was a perfectionist who was like, I really want it to go well. I don't want the second one to be a disappointment. And then there was the, I have to not think about how many people are listening. So that was kind of like a part that was blocking that anxiety. Like, just, I'm not going to think about that. It's way too much. And then the part that feels a bit sick and wants to hide, you know, that's kind of like an exile. Really, that's, you know, a young part that's like, oh no, this is way too scary, like someone might judge me. And then last of all, the part that was like, I'm just overthinking this is really annoying, I don't want to be doing this, I want to go and watch TV. So that's like a firefighter that's just like, this is too stressful, let's just
right, let's just cut and run.
So it was the managers at the beginning, and then that led, there was like a bit of an exile, and then a bit of a firefighter at the end. And so once you've written your paragraph, then I invite you to do that, to kind of reread it with a bit of a parts detecting hat on. That might be a part in itself, a kind of a thinking part, figuring it out part that likes to look and notice. And notice what different voices are there. And it may be that you only notice one. It may be that you feel really strongly about this thing, and there's one part that feels really strongly about this situation, and that's the part that's written, and that's fine. It may be that you notice two opposing voices. It may be that there's many, like there's no right or wrong about it, but just have a look and see. I deliberately put in lots for mine, but it could equally have just been like my excited part could have written a whole paragraph.
You know, what's funny about, I want to say something about my reaction to this, which is obviously a part of me and something I want to investigate. I'm really going to struggle to articulate this right. I'll start with my reaction. I think that I am so unable to divorce myself from the way I might feel about something if it were me. So for example, if I were a subject matter expert like you, it's hard for me to believe that you could be nervous. And so when I hear that, I feel shock, like that he could even, like, obviously he knows exactly what he's talking about. And why would he ever care that a million people could listen to it? But what's funny is that must be a protector of me, because I have to be heard by so many people every week. Mm-hmm. And if I could possibly be nervous, which I imagine I could be if I let myself be, it almost feels like flooding. Like I don't give a space for that nervous part, because I know that I need to show up in this way because that's the way I've set up my life. I don't know, just like an interesting thing that just happened for me.
Yeah, that really makes sense, actually, that there would be a part in you that would almost be challenged by hearing about my nervous part, because you don't want to own that you might have a nervous part because your managers know that you need to keep showing up and making amazing podcasts.
It's just so cool. Like, to me, it's such a cool inquiry into who we are, because if you're willing to be honest with yourself, which is really the key quality of healing from anything, it's just, I love the fact of replacing X with curiosity, replacing fear with curiosity, replacing judgment with curiosity, replacing certainty with curiosity, and being open to what might be happening inside of each of us. Because many people who heard you say that, and I'm sure there's people out here, would be like, well, of course, he's nervous. My goodness, it's a big podcast. But me, I'm incredulous that you're nervous, because I see you as a person who could clearly pull this off without a hitch. But it's just interesting to look at myself and say, where are my parts operating to create that reaction? So I just love this shit.
Yeah, it is. It is fantastic. And noticing how our parts respond to other people is, yeah, it's so much information, so much information there. I'm assuming by now that people have paused, and, you know, if they're going to do this exercise, they've paused, you've written your paragraph. So yeah, have a look and see if there's one voice, if there's more than one voice. If there's just one voice, then that's the part you're going to focus on. If there's more than one voice, then choose a part that you are curious about. And for the purpose of this exercise, ideally, I would suggest that you choose a protective part. Probably like a manager can be a really good place to start. Obviously, if what you have written feels like it's coming from an exile, then I would suggest that you just keep writing and just really be with that with compassion if you can. But if you've identified a protective part, so for example, like, you know, a people pleaser or a critic or a, you know, the part that blocks emotion or something like that, then that might be a good one to get to know for the purpose of this exercise. Likewise, if there's like a firefighter part, you know, part that wants you to watch Netflix, part that wants you to, you know, eat some cookies for comfort, then that can also be one that you focus on. So once you've decided which part you want to get to know, I'm going to invite you to kind of just try and focus on that part. So it's a little bit like guided meditation, just at the very beginning. So once you've decided the part that you want to focus on, I'm just going to invite you to close your eyes and just see if you can kind of tune in to the kind of energy of that part, you know, and let that part know, you know, I'm here to find out about you. I've noticed you, like I heard your voice come through in what I just wrote. And I'd really like to find out more about you.
I love this. It's just like inner child work.
Yeah. And kind of, so you're extending your energy to the part, trying to let the part know that you're there, and noticing how that part shows up in your body. So maybe if I tune in to my kind of the perfectionist part, actually the one that really wants to get it right, you know, because that part is still around, as well as my teaching learning parts, the one that's like, you know, don't mess this up, Phil. People have expectations. So that's just where I'm kind of noticing that part. So just notice where it shows up, maybe in your body, a sensation. You might notice, you know, your heartbeat. You might notice some tightness somewhere. You might notice some constriction or like a flutter in your stomach. You might notice symptoms. Or you might notice this part as a voice. You know, some parts are very vocal, some parts talk. Tell us what they think. And for some people, their parts, it can be very visual. Some people have very visual systems. You may be able to really see this part that you're interested in. It might show up. It might look like anything. It might look like a version of you, but it might look like a monster, or it might look like an animal, or it might look like a pink cloud or a shape or a wall. I connected with a part in therapy yesterday that was just like this massive stainless steel wall, which was quite cool. So just be really curious about how this part shows up for you. Thoughts, feelings, sensations. And just let this part know that you've noticed it. And see whether you have a sense that this part notices you. Ideally, we're looking for this kind of two-way connection of this part being like, okay, you're here too. And if you've managed to find and connect with a part, it'll take as long as you need. Pause me and take your time. But if you manage to connect with this part, then maybe just start to ask it, you know, what does this part want for you? What does this part want you to know? And then when you're ready, you can pause and you can start to write the answer. You know, what does this part want you to know? Or write down what you notice about this part.
This is so good. I cannot wait to tell you all the shit that's happening for me. That's so good.
I know. I wish we had time to do that, to do that bit too. You have to tell me. So the next thing to do is, once you've found this part and once you've started to kind of get a sense of it and what it does, then a very important question to ask yourself now is, how do I feel towards this part? That's a really important question in IFS, because it helps you to check whether you've got some self-energy. Because if you kind of feel, you know, neutral or curious, or if you feel some compassion or love towards the part, then there's probably some self-energy present. And you only need a bit of self-energy, you just need a bit of curiosity. But if, when you ask that question, how do I feel towards that part, you notice a really strong reaction, like, I'm frustrated, I'm annoyed, I hate it, I'm scared of it, I really, really need to rescue this part, like, immediately, then that strong reaction is probably coming from another part. So if that happens, then close your eyes again and kind of let that other part know that you've noticed it. You know, let that part know, okay, yeah, I get it, you don't like this other one, or you're scared of this other one. But ask this new one that's come in, would it be willing to give you a little bit of space so that you can get curious about that first one? And if you get a hard no, then you just switch your focus and you get to know the new one instead. But if that new one is willing, then thank it. Let it know that you'll get to know that one next time and go back to the first one. And occasionally you'll get like neither of them will agree. And that's when you end up maybe wanting to do your dialogue, actually. But if possible, see if you can manage to get an agreement, like, of the one part that's going to be your target part. And so next, if you have managed to identify a target part, and I would say, like, if you don't worry, especially if this is the first time you've ever done anything like this. If you don't manage to identify a target part, then I would invite you to just go back to your free writing and just keep writing and just keep noticing the voices that come through. So don't worry if this isn't working for you the first time you try it. Because I know that some people will have perfectionist parts, or parts that will be worried about doing it wrong, or parts that will be like, oh, I can't do IFS, like, this isn't working for me, or I'm doing it wrong. So And if you notice parts like that, then those are probably going to be your target part, actually. If you have a part that is really worried, like, I don't know how to do this, I'm doing it wrong, then that can be a really helpful one to focus on. So once you've got your target part, then, you know, close your eyes again, and I'm going to give some questions as prompts, and you can pause it whenever you want to, and you can write the answers whenever you want to. But I'm just going to give you some suggestions for questions that are useful when you want to get to know a part. And you can kind of close your eyes and go inside when you ask the question. And then when you get an answer, you can open them and you can write your answer down.
Great.
So some questions that can be really helpful are, you know, what do you want me to know about you? How are you trying to help me? What is your job in my system? How long have you been doing this job? You know, how old was I, or what was going on in my life when you first started having to protect me this way?
Oh, this is so powerful.
Yeah, they are such powerful questions to ask. And again, speaking to parts that are probably worrying about doing it wrong, you may find that you'll ask these questions and you won't get an answer. That sometimes happens to me, and I've been having IFS therapy for 2 years. You know, sometimes parts are not very vocal, and sometimes worrying, trying to get it right parts almost make it more difficult. So then those are the ones to focus on. Part just made me forget what I was going to say.
That's a firefighter, right?
Yeah, it's probably the one that wants to go watch Netflix. Like, it's Friday night, Phil. You need to rest. I'll move on because it's gone.
Yeah, I'll help just by saying that I just find this stuff to be, obviously, listen, guys, we're on a podcast. there's only a finite amount of information that we can get across and that people could even absorb. But it's what's happening for me. Forget the personal experience, is just like how powerful this is. Like, for people who are maybe stuck in their TMS journey or are just looking to delve deeper, this is the kind of work that can really get you there, because this is the slow and patient breaking down of the things that may have kept you stuck for a lifetime, and having no idea how to extrapolate, having no idea how to slow it down enough to even notice the different things that are happening. It's the reason that I make people journal speak, if possible, with their fingers on a typewriter or their hand with a pen, rather than just thinking about it, because we have to slow things down to make space for epiphany. You know, if our brains go 100 million miles a second, like, we're not going to be able to really come to any sort of real understanding of ourselves if we're just thinking all the time, which is why I make people write. And it sounds like this is exactly the same in terms of identification of parts, meaning like, you have all these things happening and they happen in the blink of an eye. You know, this is all at lightning speed. We're reacting, we're protecting, we're hiding, we're doing all these things, we're escaping. How to change our lives, right? What are we here for? We are here because we are seekers. We are here because we want to change something that feels like it's not working for us anymore. We want to take off the huge winter coat on the 100 degree day we've been carrying around with us for no good reason. But the only reason we haven't taken it off is we don't really know how. And to me, this is what you're doing with this work, which is just like really impactful.
Yeah, just that slowing down, and which is why, yes, it has that similarity to journal speak, because when you're writing, it's slowing your brain down. And so, and I guess the extra step here is I'm really asking you to actually close your eyes and ask the question inside before you then write. So that slows it down even more. And that was the thing that I had, you reminded me what I was going to say, because it is about thinking, is that it's very, very common for us to have thinking parts that try and figure out the answers, like parts that kind of really smart parts that know us and that know our other parts. And those parts often kind of have theories about, like, oh, I think this part must be from then or because of that. And sometimes those parts will almost try and answer for the other part. So sometimes it can be helpful to just kind of notice that. And when you do ask these questions inside, see if you can try to not consciously think of an answer. It's like you just see what floats to the surface. And that's a lot easier said than done. And if you do notice thinky parts, then let them answer anyway, because they often have really good information. But ideally, try and just see, you know, you just toss that question in and see what comes. And sometimes the answer won't be in words. Sometimes the answer will be a sensation in your body or an image or like a visual memory. It's not always going to be words. You'll be translating it into words in your journaling, but sometimes the answers won't be in words. So after those questions, then the next ones that I would suggest, I'll go through them quickly because people can pause, is like, ask the part, you know, do you still need to do this job? Like maybe update that part, tell that part you're not 6 anymore, you're not 11 anymore, and see if the part, you know, still needs you to do what it's doing. And then you can ask the part, you know, is what you're doing working? Is there a downside to what you're doing? And is there something else that you would rather be doing for me if you didn't have to do this? If I could free you up so you didn't have to do this, what would you like to do instead? What are you afraid would happen if you stopped doing this job for me? That's a really important question, because it can often lead to the vulnerability. It can lead to the, you know, the kind of the exile parts. And you can also ask the part, you know, is there a time when that did happen? So whatever that fear is, like if the answer is, well, you'd get overwhelmed if I didn't do this, you'd collapse. And, you know, is there a time when that has happened? Because sometimes there has been times in the past when that's happened, which makes parts even more afraid and work even harder. And last of all, I would just say, like, when you are working with a part, once you've done this inquiry and you've written down your answers, then just, you know, look back through them and just really then close your eyes, go back inside. And if you can, if it feels genuine, just really offer that part some appreciation and some gratitude for what it does for you, because sometimes parts feel very unappreciated, especially our mean critical ones.
Right. And it can make them more mean. Yeah. It probably can make them meaner and more critical because they feel so unappreciated. Phil, is it possible for you to send me those questions and I can put them in the show notes so people don't have to go over the podcast again and again if they want to remember them? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I can send you those questions and you can cut and paste them. And I'm afraid we haven't got time for the Q&A questions at all, but I can answer them in the Facebook group.
Okay, wonderful. Are you sure? I mean, I can give a couple more minutes if you want to do a couple, but if not, we can just do it in the Facebook group.
It's hard.
I know it's time for Netflix. I know it's time for Netflix on a Friday night.
Okay, so one, this is a quick one, which was from Gracie. Is there any way that we can do in-depth IFS without paying for a trained therapist? Which is a really good question. And I would say that you can do a lot on your own. You know, there may be some bits that you might want support with, but you can do an awful lot. And a book recommendation, if that's okay, Nicole, to recommend a book.
Of course.
It's called The One Inside by Tammy Sullenberger. And I think that's a really good, like, straightforward introduction. And she gives lots of journal prompts and ways of connecting and getting to know your system. And she also has a podcast, which is called The One Inside. And there is an episode on that podcast called IFS and Solo IFS, and that episode gives some really good suggestions for how to use IFS on your own. How do you know this is Gracie again? Actually, if a part has damaged you, is it a protector or is that something else? And is forgiving them letting yourself off the hook for doing something wrong by saying that it's only a part of you? I thought that was a really good question. So I was going to say, you know, remember that there are no bad parts. They all have good intentions, even if their impact is harmful. And I believe that all parts deserve forgiveness because they're just doing their best. And like at the time, they were just doing their best to protect us. But sometimes forgiveness can be difficult. There'll be other parts that won't want to forgive, and especially with parts that have hurt us or that have hurt other people. So it, you know, like anything, it's a process. But yeah, there are no bad parts. They sometimes do bad things.
Yeah. And I love the whole concept of no bad parts, because even if there were, we're not getting rid of any part of ourselves. Like, this is the thing, you know, it's about inviting everyone to come sit on the kindergarten carpet, but it's not about banishing anyone, because as soon as you try to banish any part of yourself, it just comes back screaming louder. And so we're not here to banish our parts. We're here to see them. We're here to see why everybody has shown up, and it's all for the common good. It's just sometimes the common good is confused, just like your brain and your nervous system are here for your common good. And it's sending a big fat migraine as a lovely gift, so you can slow down and say no. And that's safe in the unsafest way. That's not how we want to live. So it's really all just everything true is the same in such a lovely way. And Phil, before I close up, is there anything else? You know, I know there's a million other things we could say, and we might even have to go for a third podcast at some point, but is there anything else that you wanted to say today?
I don't think so. I will post the answers to the questions in the Facebook group, because everybody who asked the questions is there. And I just, again, want to thank people for those questions. Sorry, I didn't have time to answer them on air. But overall, yeah, I think the most important thing to remember is, as you are journaling, yeah, just remember there are no bad parts. They all have good intentions. Try to separate intention from the impact. And you can acknowledge that they've had a bad impact, but, you know, they're like those firefighters flooding your house, trying to put the fire out.
Right.
And the other thing I was going to say is, yeah, that pause, which you've already spoken to, is that is the power is in the pause. Like, when you pause and you notice what's going on inside, just like, oh, hang on, there's something happening here. Wow, there's a part of me that's reacting really strongly right now. What's that about? Immediately, we're just bringing in that curiosity, and it's so powerful.
So powerful. Well, Phil, thank you so much. You've inspired me a lot. I am going to give some thought to a lot of the things that went on. I'm going to re-listen to this when it airs so I can do the exercise again myself. I'm really, like, I want to do more of this work. This is so fascinating. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast again.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
And I want to speak to the whole chorus of parts that wrote that paragraph, that you didn't say anything stupid. It was amazing and really informative. And I hope that millions of people will hear it. And then I apologize to that part that makes him feel nervous or scared, but it is, it's important work, and people need to know about it, because it is, you know, a salve to a nervous system that can be very worried, that there are always more ways to investigate, to learn, and to embrace ourselves, which is so important.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Thanks again.
All right. Well, for everyone out there listening to the podcast, if you are enjoying it, please hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. Helps people find the podcast. And until next week, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, and I will see you then. Bye-bye.